Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
Okay, as the people come in, we'll ring the bell and we'll start the service. He's going to ring the bell. Did you want to play anything? Or? Okay, we're done. Okay. The mindfulness bell is an invitation to be still. In the Bible it says, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still. And in the silence there is a peace. And as we surrender into that peace, we set ourselves free of our mind's swirling thought patterns. And then the breath becomes conscious. Breathing in, I breathe in. And breathe out, I breathe out. And perhaps there's a little mantra that is perfect for you. One of the ones that I like to use is, I am letting go with my exhalation of the things that no longer serve me. As I'm letting go, I am free. I am made whole. And then I turn it into a little chant. I am letting go of the things that no longer serve me. As I'm letting go, I am healed. I am made whole. So we come here as an opportunity to claim our birthright, which is wholeness. It is the perception of wholeness that is all healing, says Dr. Ernest Holmes. And so when we put our attention on this innate, inherent wholeness of our being, we're set free of those nattering nabobs of negativity, those patterns of consciousness that want to pull us out into some reaction to the world, or something, a story that we've allowed to fester within our hearts and minds. And so for this brief time together, let's set an intention to be fully present in the moment, to observe what is arising for us. And whatever arises, we get to say, this too is good. This too is for God. And I demand to see the blessing. So when an uncomfortable pattern might be arising within, we meet it. We don't condemn it. We don't push it away. But we listen. We listen with an open heart. And then you hear the Sufis that say, allow your head to fall into your heart so that thoughts that arise become loving, compassionate thoughts. Gentleness begins to arise within. We start with ourself, and then we extend it to the world. And then we hear the loving kindness meditation. And we feel that gentle awareness establishing us in a deepest acceptance of what is. And then curiosity begins to flower. How can I allow this to flow through my days, where I am being kind to myself and the world, where I am listening to what arises within without condemning it, so that I might meet it and embrace it? Listening to this inner guidance system that is always seeking to make our path easy so that we can find the gifts that life is offering to us. As we open to this experience, we say yes, 1,000 times yes. And in that yes, I invite you to open your eyes and to be here now so that we can once again excavate that which is sacred within. One of my teachers, I've had so many, I'm 75 years old, and one of my teachers was Rumi. And Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, he says there is a field. And he said, when the soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. Oftentimes they get in the way. Even the idea, each other, does not exist. And then he says, I will meet you there. Now that sounds really abstract to a logical thinking person who might be an engineer. Because he's saying out beyond good and bad, right and wrong, there is this field of awareness, a field of loving awareness. And when we all lie down in that field, well, words are not necessary because we're having a felt experience, a tantric experience of the energy coming together as one. Now, people like me experience the tantra with his plants. All these plants have been nurtured and loved by me. I have a lot of animals. I've had a lot of animals. And in fact, I just bought a book and it was all about all the animals that you've had in the past have a soul connection with their human. And even in death, they're still here with you. So I was on vacation and I got a little book about all the animals. And I swear to God, I'm haunted by my two dogs that made their transition, Bert and Speck. They left their little pug behind. And the pug was raised by Bert and Speck. And now that he's getting so old, last night he slept by the side of my body where baby Speck would lie. And he was doing a little whimper with his head in my armpit. And I said, baby Speck is taking care of Humphrey as he's lying in my arms. And then he can't walk anymore. But when he could slightly waddle, he would waddle to the hole in the carpet in the dining room that Bert, the male dog, had made where he would sleep. So now Humphrey sleeps in Bert's hole and he sleeps on baby's side of the bed. And it's such a sacred dance that I'm doing with him. You know, when I studied with the Sufis, they have only one spiritual rule. And I love it. It's called adab. And adab means respect. If you treat everything with respect, you're practicing adab. So when you take off your shoes, you don't kick them off. You place your shoes. And how you do anything is how you do everything. So I like to think of my life as practicing spiritual practice is an ongoing thing, moment to moment to moment. I pulled out my wonderful book called The Master Teacher Within by James Twyman. And you see on the cover, there is a Buddha-like character receiving the light within the crown chakra. You know, the chakra system is an ancient Hindu system. The root chakra is about security and safety. The second chakra is right in here, and that's about sex, money, and power, Bill Clinton. Third chakra is about the ego, you know, who am I? Am I this aspiring person to achieve? Then when you move to the fourth chakra, which is the heart chakra, you see the symbol of the Star of David. The upper three chakras and the lower three chakras intersect, and they hover right here in the heart chakra. To me, this is where we want to hang out. And then you hear the Sufis put the head into the heart, so your thoughts become loving thoughts. Since Anastasia brought it up, the fifth chakra is the chakra of surrender. The sixth chakra is where you open the third eye. And of course, the crown chakra is where you open to the universe. Again, it's a metaphor designed to help us discover that field of oneness that we all share. So at the end of this lovely book, Finding the Master Teacher Within, and then I hear Krishnamurti, another one of my teachers. He said, in oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and to learn, well, then the door is there and the key is in your hand. But no one gives you that key or the door to open except yourself. That saying changed my life when I was 21 in New York City because I was looking all outside myself for things. And he said, in oneself, you have to look here and discover it. Now it's taken. This Easter is my 35th anniversary as being a minister here at the center. And I remember saying to the universe, I'll do anything but be a minister, because I thought religion was the opiate of the people. Well, obviously, I didn't have a clue. And the husband that I've been with for 50 years, I said, any but him. He was the homewrecker 50 years ago when I was my first lover. He was the one that they ran off together. I hated him. Well, I've been with him for 50 years. So obviously, the universe has an idea that I don't have a clue about. Could we open to that mystery? So James Twyman, in his evolutionary path, he gets to the end of the book, and I thought this would be helpful for all of us. He says, the goal of our journey here is to realize the truth of who we really are. We're a spiritual being, we're having a human experience. We're a soul having a human experience. So he says, you are not the body or the identity that you've believed yourself to be. You are the love that underlies all of existence. Isn't that powerful? The essence of all that is. Rumi says, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. And then he says, oh, drop. This is a metaphor. Oh, drop, give it up. Oh, to be wooed by the ocean. The drop for an ocean. So he's saying, give up your drop nature and know that you are the ocean in manifestation. You are the love that underlies all of existence, the essence of all that is. And when you realize this truth, you'll experience a sense of oneness with everything and everyone. It's all the same. Then you hear Einstein. Einstein says there's two kinds of people, those who believe there are two and those who don't. If you believe there are two, then we're separate. But if you know that we're all part of the one, well then, in the science of mind, Ernest Holmes says, one, one, one. If we teach anything, we teach oneness. And when you feel your heart opening, for the, when Jan and I were in South Africa, the very first day we were there at the Parliament of the Religions, this woman stood up and she said, I had five children last year that died from AIDS. It was epidemic time. This was 1999. And she said, I want you to know that we are all the mother and they are all our children. Well, in that moment, that first day on this spiritual journey, every little homeless child I saw in the street, I felt they were my child. And they said, don't give these kids food because, or give them money because they'll buy drugs. Well, I went around and started giving them food and taking them out and buying them pops. They wanted popsicles and candy, but it's food. Anyway, oneness with everything and everyone, and you'll know that there is nothing to fear or to protect. We don't have to be afraid anymore. We can turn in our fear button for faith and curiosity. How can I serve? He says this, and in this state of realization, you'll be able to fully embrace the present moment, no matter what it is, and experience the fullness of life with all of its ups and downs. You'll no longer be limited by the past or the future, and you'll be able to fully express the love that you are in everything you do. You know the symbol of the cross. These are the yantras of the world religions, since, and you can meditate on any one of these, and they will take you into this realization. That shows you it's a universal truth. And you know when he says, find the sacredness of the moment. The symbol of the cross, and it's over there. We have the Celtic cross with the circle. It's the vertical reality of now, cutting through past and future, and where it stops is the sacred moment. Now, that's what the symbol is. I grew up as a little kid with a glow-in-the-dark crucifix over my little bed with the crown of thorns and the nails that scared me. Scared the bejeebies out of me as a little kid. Now, when I know what it really means, it's about entering into the sacred moment. Well, I'm saying, why didn't they tell me the truth way back then? In this state of realization, you'll be able to fully embrace the present moment and experience the fullness of your life. You'll no longer be limited by the past or the future, and you'll be able to fully express the love that you are in everything you do. Suzanne's visiting from Fresh Market. She is the most loving person. When I stand in that line, she just opens my heart. I just want you to know that she's here for the first time, Suzanne. Welcome home. Release the chains that bind you, he says, and embrace the wings that will take you to the heights of your soul's expression. Wow. Doesn't that sound celestial? Put on your wings and you can fly. Peter Pan was my favorite story as a little boy. You know how you fly? You think lovely thoughts. And then you go to Never Never Land. Because you won't grow up. The journey may seem daunting, but the rewards are beyond measure. So trust in the love that you are. And let it guide you to the truth that has always been with you. Truth is always there. The Greek word for truth is that which unhides itself. So the truth was always there. But guess what it required? That we go within and discover the truth. We don't ask, what's the truth, Barbara? What's the truth, Gigi? No, no, no. That's somebody else's truth. The organic truth arises, and it's always been there, waiting our recognition. So when we get still, and we know that we're not the skin-encapsulated ego, that there is this divine love in us that's fully awake and aware, it will arise when we're ready. So our challenge is to be committed. And, you know, committed comes from that Latin word comitare, which means to circle your attention around something. So are you committed to this something, the truth of your being? Or are you committed to having someone else fix your world out there? That's not going to happen. So many people want to change the world, but so few people want to make a commitment to change themselves. Ooh, that's, I know. Change, the big C word. And then the other C word that's an addiction, and I suffer from the C word. When the 12-step program, they say, what are you addicted to? I realize that I'm addicted to being in control of my life. And I remember I was at a spiritual conference, and I was literally having one of those meltdowns. You know, when you fall to your knees and something is awakening within you, and I'm sobbing, I'm having this direct experience, and the teacher says, so what are you crying about? And I said, I'm afraid I'm losing control. And he says, he thinks he has control. And in that moment, I thought, okay, we can't control this life. When something wants to wake up, could we say yes to it, no matter how painful it is? I'm teaching some fun classes, and this is one of my favorites. It's called The Soul's Human Experience. And this lady is certifiably crazy. I absolutely love her. And in the end of the book, she talks about what we're here to do. You'll love this, Calix. She says, your purpose is to recognize your true nature. Same thing he says. But, you know, men say it in more of an academic, cerebral way. She says it in a passionate, twinkly sort of way. You're here to discover your true nature, that you are a soul in a body and an extension of universal energy. You're a soul in a body with universal energy. And to live from this place in everything you do, your individual and unique expression fulfills your purpose, to be uniquely you. And then I hear Dr. Bernie Siegel, be who you is and not who you ain't. Because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. And if you is who you ain't, well, then you ain't who you is. So you got to be who you are, this authentic expression of your soul. She goes on to say, kindness is a part of your purpose. Then you hear His Holiness the Dalai Lama, my religion is kindness. Kindness is part of your purpose. Love is part of your purpose. To love with equanimity, equally. Shining your brightest possible wattage is part of your purpose. And then she says somewhere over here, move from being, what does she say? Move from dull to sparkle. Isn't that fun, Calix? Move from dull to sparkle, and you're sparkling today. Okay. Shining your brightest possible wattage is part of your purpose, and touching others is also a part of your purpose. To touch them, and you know where you touch them? You touch them right here. You meet in that space where I see you and you see me. We all want to be heard. We want to be seen. So she goes on a little bit more about this, our purpose. Your purpose in this lifetime, first of all, you got to recognize what it is. It isn't to be a great success and make a ton of money and have the world fall at your feet because you have arrived at billionaire status. No, no. Your purpose in this lifetime is to recognize that you have the light of the universe within you and to shine this light in all that you do. Then you hear Jesus himself, don't put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. You hear Buddha who say, be a light unto the world. You hear the Quran, nur ala nur, light upon light. And in the Sufi tradition, they say we incarnate with light and love. And when we die, we take the light with us, but we leave the love behind. Well, that's kind of fun to sit with, isn't it, Chris? The love is eternal. You can't. And if love was ever real, it never goes anywhere. I truly know that. So, he says, this universal within you will shine the light in all that you do as only you can do it. We're not here to mimic and copy someone else. We're here to be our unique expression of light and love. So, this is the gift that you can give to the world. Your gifts are acts of service. And then I hear Ram Dass, when he left his guru in India, his guru sent him back to the States. And he says, Ram Dass, you must go back to love, to serve, and to remember. To be the love that you are, to serve the moment, whatever the moment requires, and to always remember who you are. Tatwam Asi, it says in Sanskrit, you are that. You are that divine presence, that divine love. That's all there is on the planet. So, and then in the Sufi tradition, it's so simple. It's all about forgetting and remembering. When I forget who I am, I think I'm me separate from you. When I remember who I am, I realize that it's all the beloved and that we are all the beloved. We're all part of this divine love. Can't you kind of feel that connection that we have? Even the new ones that I haven't really met you, we meet in that field of love. Out beyond the ideas of right thinking, wronging, there is this field. And when we lie down in that field, words are not necessary. Even the idea each other does not exist. And so we meet in this field of awake love. And then we see ourselves everywhere. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. And then you hear Meister Eckhart. To see God in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. So could we see God in the bunny rabbit that's bouncing down the alleyway looking for a home? Could we see God in, I was out feeding my two fish, Napoleon and Josie, a little version of Josephine, and they come up I wanted to be fed. And as I was feeding the fish, there's a snake slithering around the pond and finding shelter. And I thought, oh, I have a little snake by the pond. Isn't that lovely? Now, my neighbor lady, she saw a snake in her yard. She picked up the rake and she threw the snake. I said, it's just a little snake. And he's finding a little. They're all your children, remember? We're all the mother. They're all our children. I'm just saying. As only you can. This is the gift that you give the world. Your gifts are acts of service. And service is part of your purpose. So the inner knowing is to shine our light on the path that you have chosen. Skipping over, she says, purpose is showing kindness, love, and expressing yourself in ways that bring you joy. Joy, joie de vivre. What brings you joy? And you know, what you sow is what you're going to reap. It's that simple. So if you sow joy, what are you going to reap? You're going to reap joy. If you sow compassion, you're going to reap compassion. You know, you've seen this, the plants all around the church. My house is filled with plants, and I had this Garden of Eden. You could call it a Garden of Weeden as well. But in the 30 years that we've lived there, so many things have been planted with love, and as spring comes, I see them surfacing. And my sweet husband thinks that we should tear it all down and put down mulch. And I said, but these are my children that are coming up. I saw an actual red tulip that made it, that survived, and all the wildflowers. You are not forgotten. You do have a purpose. You are unique. You are special with your energetic fingerprint to make its mark in this world. So she's inviting us to find what brings you alive and then offer it to the world, because only you can do that. So if you leave here with nothing else, just I'm just here to let my light shine in the world and to be of service and to remember who I am. Is it that simple? Well, I think it is, you know, that we're eternal beings and we're having a human experience. And don't let the human part get you down, because that's how we grow. One of my heroes is Mark Nepo, and he wrote this book called The Endless Practice. And he had cancer in his 30s, nearly passed. But the gift of cancer, it took him to this deeper connection. And so at the end of the book, he was talking about, I'm in the last quarter of my life. So I'm 70 years old. My father's in his 90s, and he's making his transition. He had a stroke. And he said, as I'm holding my father's hands, he said, I realize that my father and I are one, but he doesn't really get it yet. But I can know that for him. And he said, when I think about these moments where we have these breakdowns and this we're ripped apart, he says, in those broken places, that's where you find the gold. And so if we, when we have these challenges, could we go into that broken place? You know, in the indigenous people, they would say when they would make their tapestries, by the way, this is from Uzbekistan, handmade by a woman, and when I purchased it, and I thought of the indigenous people, they would make these tapestries, but they would always leave a flaw in the tapestry so that the soul could escape. So what if when we have these sacred flaws, that's where we get to find the gold? And then we can smile, ah, when we find the broken places, that's where God comes through. Isn't that beautiful to hear? In the broken places, that's where God comes through. Come on in, darling. So yeah, the soul's journey is taking us to the present moment where we find ourselves. Let's see. Nepo Twyman, Class Khan. So this month is, I'm doing a theme, and the theme is called The Art of Being. You're not a human doing, you're a human being. And I spoke with my prayer partner this morning. He's in Vancouver, British Columbia. And it was so interesting. He's speaking today on the Anamkara, which is the soul friend. And being that it's St. Patrick's Day, John O'Donohue was this wonderful Catholic priest who lived in Ireland. And when he went through the monastery, he finally left the Catholic Church because I couldn't take it. There was too much sin there. So John O'Donohue left the Catholic Church, and then he went into his Celtic roots. And he found that the Celtic and the Catholic, they could come together in a harmony, because he understood what Jesus was really saying, that we need to have our own resurrection. You know, there's something that needs to die so that the Christ can awaken. So he wrote this beautiful book called The Anamkara. And if anybody's thinking about having a relationship, when I used to do marriage counseling, I would say, read this book first, because the Anamkara is the soul friend. The soul friend is there to support the emergence of your partner's soul. It's not there to dominate or have someone obey or to take care. No, those are old ways of thinking. The Anamkara is the soul friend who, when you're with them, your soul comes alive. And I would want to say that you're all my Anamkaras out here. So what if that's what it's all about, finding that? The gift of being, no, the art of being. The first week I spoke about, and I do this because it works on my consciousness, the first week I spoke about we are God's seedling, Now, maybe that's the gardener in me that chose that title. But what if it's all about sowing and reaping? So if I plant the God seed, and then you hear Meister Eckhart again, he says, if you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. If you plant a pear seed, you get a pear tree. And if you plant a God seed, well, then you'll get a God. So could we plant that God seed? And maybe that's what I'm doing this Sunday, in this fertile soil of your awareness, that there is this divine presence within all creation, and it wants to awaken. It wants to put down roots into truth, the truth that's inherent within us. It wants to flower as the expression of our soul and ultimately bear fruit in the fullness of your life. And you can see, when you've been doing this as long as I have reaped so much blessings. This setter is a sacred blessing to me. So that's being the God seed. And then last week, and this is really crucial for me, and it's something that I live by, we must resolve to evolve. We're here, you know, it's all about involution and evolution. This is Sri Aurobindo. We take in the truth, and we let it evolve us so that we no longer see ourselves as that lowly worm in the dust. You know, we no longer see ourselves as a victim of circumstances. We see ourselves as something awakening to truly a masterpiece, a divine masterpiece. And then I hear Emerson says, there is a stream whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes, I know not. But when it comes, he said, I am a pensioner. I draw from this something, this energy of the divine, this awake awareness that's always connecting with us. You know, we spoke a lot about people who are grieving because they've lost people in their lives. And, you know, I've lost so many. I mean, 75. When I was a young man in Atlanta becoming a minister, they had the AIDS crisis there, and I had so many young men die in my arms. And they were lost souls, so many of them. And last year, my twin sister left right at Christmas time, and they found her dead. And I was sad that I hadn't been more in touch with her. We had, you know, been separated by distance. But the strange thing is, after she died now, it's like she's with me all the time. I feel her every day, and I think, what's wrong with me? And she said, I'm still with you. She calls me Scott. That's my middle name. And you know what's with me about her is her sweetness, her kindness. She was so compassionate. And I feel that awakening within me. So could we know that, and my teacher Llewellyn Van Lee says, you have to have a screw loose to be on the spiritual path. You can't be so tightly wound that you're skeptical. When the mystery starts to come through you, as so many people shared in the revealing service, I love what Mike said about these images come. Where are they coming? I'm a pensioner. I draw from them. The stream whose source is hidden. And you know, when it knows you're ready, well, then it's going to preach to you from everywhere. The beloved John O'Donohue, when he made his transition, he died at 52 of a heart attack. And when David White gave his eulogy, David White says, I can see John sitting in Ireland looking at Connemara and just looking and looking and looking. And then I hear Plotinus say, look at the flower. And let the flower preach to you. Don't go try to change the stars and the galaxies and stop them from dancing. No, let's get real simple. Look at a flower and let that flower preach to you. It's gospel. And then we become teachable. We become receptive. And then you hear Jesus say, be like a child if you would enter the kingdom. There is this original innocence that we all have. So could we defer to that wise one who is not programmed by the world to chase after illusions? You know, the dream that we all seem to be chasing after. And then I had this epiphany with a children's song. You'll probably like this, Calix. It all boils down to row, 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 your boat, not somebody else's boat, gently down the stream, merrily, 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 merrily. There's four merrilies for every three rows. So you're here to have fun. Why? Because life is just a dream. This is the dream that we create by what we image. And when we let go of the dream, and then you hear Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote the Four Agreements, in the Toltec spirituality, he says we get stuck in what they call the matote. The matote is the dream that we've either been handed by the world or the dream that we've somehow conjured up. And when you can set yourself free from the dream, well, then you get to explore, well, then what is life all about? And then he gives us the Four Agreements in the Toltec tradition, if that, you know, blows your skirt up, as someone would say, if that's what works for you. And they're wonderful. You know, make no assumptions. You get out of the idea that we got it figured out. Always do your best. And sometimes your best is, I got to walk out of a marriage. I was there when I had to leave my first marriage. I was rejected. I mean, I wanted it to last forever, but it wasn't meant to. And you know what's so funny? I've tried to maintain the relationship with this first lover, and I've gotten to the place, like Anastasia pointed out, I need to let that thing end. Because it was toxic when it started, And I had all these illusory thoughts. There's something beautiful about taking responsibility for the life that you've been given. And when you're ready, and you know, then no becomes the new yes. When I can say no to something out there, I'm really saying yes to something in here. And then life becomes this glorious dance. How are you meeting life? And then the teacher is everywhere. It comes from everywhere. One of the teachers that I met just a year ago, and he inspires me so much by his example, his name is Matt Kahn. And Matt Kahn wrote a beautiful little book called Whatever Arises, Love That. Whatever arises. If it's the demons that come, you love the demon. He's coming there to show you where you're. And so I pulled him out yesterday. I think I have some glasses. Well, I had some glasses. Oh, well, they're somewhere. Okay. He said, best of all, when love can be invited to work through you and respond on your behalf, you don't even need to know why things occur. By loving what arises, you unearth the deepest understanding of the universe in the most heart-centered way. So all that is required is a willingness to open your heart. Whoever shows up. With every step forward into this new spiritual paradigm, you are able to celebrate the arrival of heart-centered consciousness while holding a sacred space for the ascension of Earth and the awakening of humanity. You see how it all goes right down to the ascension of Earth? I'm so glad that Mary spoke about these little forests. Is it you, Mary, that talked about them? Nancy. Oh, it was Nancy. Well, I'm getting you all confused. Nancy, thank you for the forest. My sweet husband has been fighting to save the trees in Huntsville. And when our neighbor cut down the two big trees, he's now practicing shunning the neighbors for the rest of his life. I said, that's not how we're going to create peace on Earth. But he took it personally. And so what if in planting a tree, we plant immortality? They're all part of this dance. That's where the love comes in. So he says this. The importance of cultivating unconditional love is an essential stage in the completion of our journey. Whether manifesting a soulmate, whether healing the body, whether seeking liberation from suffering, or integrating past realizations into a fully embodied state of being, each spiritual milestone swiftly finds its way to you once love has been invited into your life. So then when the shadows come up, you know, Rumi says, this being human is like being in a guest house. Come knocking at the door are your fears and your worries and your judgments and your anxiety. And Rumi says, invite them all in and sit them down at the table. They may be coming to clean out your house. So he's saying the same thing, whatever arises. If you've got anxiety, Bill, love that anxiety. So this is the dawning of your highest potential. It is the emergence of your soul into the beauty of this human experience. It is the long-awaited fulfillment of your divine destiny. Well, don't you want to live your destiny? Your destiny is to shine, to serve, and to remember, Suzanne. It's not that complicated, just to show up for the moment. And for the spiritual growth of all who inhabit our magnificent planet, it is a love revelation that begins with you. Well, let's say that together. It's a love revolution, revelation? I can't read it. Realization that begins with you. Anyway, I'm reading without my glasses. Many blessings, he says, because this is only the beginning. This is only the beginning. Yeah, this is the beginning where love gets to flower in our lives. So Jody's going to ring the bell. I'm going to do a little meditation. Then we have a special song from County Cork in Ireland, and we're going to invite you to participate in it. And then we'll do a little collection and a closing song. So, Miss Jody. Thank you. Again, that's the mindfulness bell. And when I studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, they would ring the bell throughout the day. And when the bell would ring, no matter what you were doing, you would stop right where you are. You would take three integrating breaths. And then you would rest in this felt awareness of love. You can't think your way into oneness, but you can feel your way into it. So we can feel this connection to the breath. And breath is another word for spirit. And so as we all breathe in and we all breathe out, we are all experiencing the same spirit, the same life. There is but one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is but one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. And when we begin to feel this intimacy into me see with that which is always there waiting for us. So God never went anywhere. We have taken our attention off this beautiful stillness. And they say stillness is the language of God. Everything else is a poor translation. And so when we become truly still in that deep heartfelt knowing within, we can feel this connection to all of life. So now I'd like to invite you to, in your mind's eye, image someone that you dearly love. Could be a pet, could be another human. And let that feeling of love arise within you as you see them in your mind's eye. And now, very lovingly, let that image dissolve, but stay in that vibration of love. And this establishes us in that field, where even the idea, each other, does not exist. And so when we meet in that field of love, we have arrived. We are home. The sign over, the calligraphy over my head on the wall says that. That was coined by Thich Nhat Hanh. That's his calligraphy. And our job is to remember that we're there already. And rest as that. You can feel there's an abiding peace there. There's a radical deep acceptance of life on life's terms, not on my terms. Could we open to this deepest acceptance and say, yes, this too is good and this too is God. And so I make a demand on the universe. Let me see the blessing here. And then sometimes those life lessons hurt. They create a sense of struggle sometimes. And then I hear my dear friend Tom Costa said, that's why there's the ow in growth. Sometimes it hurts to grow. We have to let go of things that perhaps no longer serve us. And as we're letting go, we are free. We're made whole. And as we set ourselves free, we also set others free. And when I was working with the young men dying from AIDS, there was a chant from Louise Hay, doors closing, doors opening. Doors closing, doors I'm opening. I am safe, it's only change. I am safe. It's only change. So this Sunday, we're speaking about a new way of being a human being. A new way of being a human being. And so I would suggest maybe we could be in that flow, going down the river, not up the river, being gentle with ourselves, being merrily on our journey, letting go of the dream of yesterday so we can allow the revelation of today. Saying yes, 1,000 times yes to what life brings. And whatever arises, we make a commitment to love that. Whatever arises. If it's our anxious little one, we love the anxious little one. If it's fearful Freddy that comes up, we love fearful Freddy. If it's controlling Curtis that comes up, we embrace controlling Curtis. Because we are safe, it's only change. And so in this new way of being human, we take responsibility, not as a finger waving in the face, but as an ability to respond out of love. And then we are responsible to the moment. We are responsible to our soul. We are responsible to the world. And we give this world a big old hug. And as we hug the world, guess what the world does to us? It just hugs us back. We smile, knowing all is well, and all shall be well. And so it is. So thank you so much. That was fun.
I am overflowing with love. I am overflowing. Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new